and silver, father's brain and gold, but your brain with your father, keep on the gallows for Lord. I'm broken it. Yes, I thought it. Give it bring me, keep on gallows for.
Whether you've heard of him or not, it's likely you know a number of Lead Belly songs. They're an integral part of the American musical lexicon, sung for decades by school children, folk musicians, and rock stars. Although he is one of the giants of 20th century American music, the life of Hootie Ledbetter has been shrouded in mystery and myth. Much of that's cleared up in a film called Legend of Lead Belly, which airs tonight at 8 p.m. on the Smithsonian Channel. It documents the hard life of a man whose music defied boundaries and classifications and who went from spending time in America's most brutal prisons to performing in Carnegie Hall and also on the airwaves here at WMIC. Also tomorrow, Smithsonian Folkways is releasing Lead Belly, the Smithsonian Folkways collection, 108 tracks and 5 CDs that chronicle the musical life of Lead Belly. And joining us now are Lead Belly scholar John Reynolds and singer-songwriter Valerie June. Welcome to our show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
John, although, as I said, Lead Belly was one of the more influential American musicians of the 20th century, why do you think so many people remain unaware of the man and his legacy?
He really hasn't had a lot of publicity. Like a lot of other folk artists, you know.
But he was very big at one point, and everybody knew his name, especially in people who followed folk music in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, there was always so much misinformation about Lead Belly, you know, that he was a wild man running around town with a knife, which he was anything but that.
Well, that's because he'd served time in two prisons.
Yeah.
The Smithsonian Channel's documentary shows just how hard his life was, especially when he lived in Louisiana and Texas. Did music help him survive the hardships that he encountered?
I think it was the main thing that kept him going because he had his guitar with him.
Now, Valerie, you have recorded a fair number of his songs. What are some of the songs that listeners would definitely know?
Everyone would be familiar, I'm sure, with Goodnight Irene. It's been covered by so many different artists, or the tune called In the Pines. Nirvana covered that tune and made it very popular to a lot of younger listeners of American roots and folk music. So those are a couple of that folks might be familiar with.
We also heard, we opened with him playing extraordinary guitar. That's a 12-string guitar?
Yes, definitely.
And how many people play 12-string guitar?
There are probably about a dozen. The film acts like Roger McGuinn is the only one doing it, but Ry Cooder, Robert Plant, Bonnie Raitt.
By the way, we didn't mention Rock Island Line. It's a mighty good road.
Right.
Everybody knows that song, I think.
One thing that was interesting about that song was the normal introduction, I got cows, I got sheep, blah, blah, blah. During World War II, Lead Belly would change the lyrics to say, I got guns, I got tanks, I got bombs.
Did he write any of the songs that he sang?
Some of them. He pretty much put songs together from fragments of other songs. He definitely wrote the bourgeois blues. Hmm.
But most of them, he was just singing traditional songs that he personalized?
Yes. But he basically almost rewrote them because he didn't just change a few words. He would add a verse from another song.
Where did he grow up? And what was his childhood like?
He grew up in Shreveport, Louisiana, in Mooringsport, outside Shreveport. His parents owned 65 acres of farmland, and he went to school till he was 12. So, and then he started picking cotton.
Because they were very poor, I assume.
They weren't that poor because he was a pampered child, you know.
How did he come to pick up a guitar?
His cousin Edmund gave him a guitar when he was a boy. It was a 6-string guitar.
So if he grew up like that, how come he wound up living on Fannin Street, this famous street in Shreveport, Louisiana?
Well, he didn't really live there. He hung out there. His father would drive him into town, and he would see these women. But the women he saw mannequins in shop windows, and he wondered what they were, and he asked his father, and his father said, son, that's fashion. Because he would see them standing in the windows going, and at the end of the day, they would still be there.
So eventually he did figure out what
yes,
was happening
of course.
There. That was a red light district. He moved to Dallas when he was in his early 20s, and he met up with Blind Lemon Jefferson. Blind Lemon Jefferson has to be one of the greatest blues singers that ever lived. Do you see any connection between the two in the music?
I certainly do. They're both masters of American roots music, Vaughn Lemon Jefferson being one who inspired so many people in the blues side of things. And I think one of the magical things about Lead Belly is that he took blues and married it with folk and was able to bring it to massive amounts of musicians from British bands all the way to rock and roll bands. So it just shows how American roots music is just the start of what can happen when you study that type of music.
But I don't think of Lead Belly as a blues singer.
I don't either. I think of Lead Belly as an island who stands alone, undefined, and who carries the legacy of what American music can be about. And he's almost like an old quilt of American music in a lot of ways.
Well, when we're talking about roots music, are we talking about roots music that would come out of white and black communities? Or is this mostly the music that he grew up listening to as a black child?
I would say it's out of white and black communities, and not just that, it goes even further to African communities or English and Irish ballads and marrying all of those different stories and melodies and sounds into one. And I think that happened a lot in the American South with the music of Blind Lemon Jefferson and Memphis Minnie and Lead Belly, and even into Odetta and Pete Seeger. It just carries on and on.
Odetta, in a way, is kind of like an updated Lead Belly in that she wasn't really a blues singer, but she sang out of the black tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was called a female Lead Belly when she first came to town.
Did he ever record with Blind Lemon Jefferson?
No.
But they
respected each other.
And then he was convicted of murder in 1917 of his cousin's husband.
Yes.
Do we know whether he actually did it?
I believe he did do it, but he did the crime and he did the time. So his attitude was, get off the case. Seriously.
He wound up being pardoned eventually by the Texas governor, Pat Neff,
yes,
in 1925. So he spent 8 years in prison. Was he developing his music during that time?
Well, he had a guitar with him all the time. It wasn't a 12-string. It was a 6-string guitar that was painted green.
Why was he released? I mean, eight years for murder is not all that long.
But he was really up for parole for good behavior and such.
And then he found himself back in prison
4 years later.
And this time it was not in a prison where anybody would want to go. It was Angola in Louisiana.
Right. And even Lead Belly was maybe a little drunk, and he was sort of dancing in the street outside a Salvation Army tent meeting. And some white man told him to knock it off, and they got into an altercation.
And so he wound up back in prison.
Yeah.
Was he treated like other prisoners? Was he already well known at this time?
No, not at all.
That didn't happen until John Lomax first heard him?
Yes. Lead Belly went to prison in Louisiana in 1930, and Lomax discovered Lead Belly in 1933, and then Lead Belly was released in the end of 1934.
He heard him in prison and recorded
him. Yes.
And then recorded him for the Smithsonian, I assume?
For the Library of Congress.
Library of Congress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did people realize almost immediately that they were hearing something special?
Certain people did. Certain people didn't.
My guests are John Reynolds and Valerie June. We're talking about Lead Belly. Actually, there's a film directed by Alan Ravenscroft that will be broadcast tonight on the Smithsonian Channel, also a collection called Lead Belly, the Smithsonian Folkways Collection. 5 CDs is being released tomorrow. Pretty much all of those things were released originally on Folkways. Is that where you heard them first, Valerie?
That is where I first heard of Lead Belly's music, but I really heard of it through Bob Dylan and people like, you know, as I said before, Nirvana. And then from there, because I'm interested in American roots music, I was like, what's the origin of these songs? So I began to study them. And you can find tons of information on his music through the Smithsonian Folkways, but also Library of Congress has a good collection, too.
There's a really interesting story as to how Mo Ash discovered Lead Belly. Lead Belly and Einstein had appeared at a concert, I think in Milwaukee, about 1944.
Einstein was singing, too?
No, it was
he was just
a
playing 12-string guitar.
But anyway, when he got back to New York, he called Mo Ash and said, you've got to record this guy I met last week.
So Einstein actually played a role in getting
very definitely
Lead Belly on Folkways.
Yes.
The relationship between Lead Belly and the Lomaxes has been rather controversial. Some people felt that the Lomaxes took advantage. They got writing credit on some of the songs that obviously he was singing before he ever met them.
What happened was John Lomax wrote a book and he included Lead Belly's songs in the book. Consequently, Lomax owned the copyright on all those songs. So Lead Belly couldn't sing them without getting permission. So when Lead Belly was filing a suit against Lomax, he had to drop the suit and then he could sing his own songs. So consequently, most of Lead Belly's material is split three ways: John Lomax, Alan Lomax, and Lead Belly.
To this day.
To this day.
Well, did Lead Belly leave any heirs?
Yes, Lead Belly's niece, Tiny Robinson, was the heir to the estate.
Valerie June, do you remember the first song by Lead Belly you ever heard?
It would be In the Pines. That was the first one I heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting that, you know, there's the controversy over John Lomax and Alan and the percentages of who owns what of his writing when they were all in the car going around the different prisons, and he was a chauffeur and he was a magnet for picking up melodies and songs. Wasn't he kind of taking from other prisoners as well? It's kind of like American music at a certain point began to be borrowed and shared quite a bit between different cultures and colors, and whether you're in prison or out of prison, and the stories just began to be traded back and forth. So I think that's an interesting point about his life and the story of his songs.
Well, so much of American folk music could just be called public domain, PD, and nobody would get any writing credit for it. But then when you look on record labels, you find out that the Rolling Stones wrote a song by Robert Johnson, that
yes,
all sorts of they wrote Love in Vain, even though Robert Johnson recorded it before they were born. So it gets very complicated, doesn't it, dude?
Yes.
And Lead Belly really, as you say, didn't compose these things. He did his versions of them, which you can get writing credit for as well.
Yeah.
But it's not the same thing.
I mean,
as
like Bourgeois Blues, I don't think the Lomaxes have any get any percentage of that. There are certain Lead Belly songs.
Woody Guthrie once said of the name Lead Belly, a hard name for a harder man. What do you mean by that?
Well, Lead Belly was a hard man. I mean, he physically hard, and he could
You have to be hard in order to be able to sing your way out of prison as much as he did.
I mean, so he would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning in prison and work all day, you know, 6 days a week, you know, for several years.
But there are some harmful stories about him. And there is even a headline from the January 3rd, 1935 edition of the New York Herald Tribune that might be considered especially insulting. You want to tell us
about
that?
Yes. Lead Belly, sweet singer of the swamplands, here to do a few songs between homicides. Well, he was called a homicidal harmonizer.
Well, he did kill, but
yes.
He also wound up having a weekly show on WMYC called Folk Songs of America. What do you know about that show? It was 1941.
Yeah. I think they were about 15 minutes, and some of those shows are actually on the Smithsonian album. I think there are three shows. He had Woody Guthrie on and Cisco Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I forget who else.
So he was part of that circle, the American folk singing circle. Do you think of yourself, Valerie, as a folk singer?
I could be considered a folk singer or American roots music singer or blues singer. I feel that if there was anything I'd want to be, it'd be undefined and just Valerie June. And I think Lead Belly, after years, did succeed in being able to be an island in American music. He's just Lead Belly. When you hear his tunes, it's just, wow, that's a Lead Belly tune.
Although Goodnight Irene, for example, which was a monster bestseller at one point, was a hit for the Weavers. Did any of his records even make the charts?
I would say no.
No.
One of the main reasons why Goodnight Irene was so popular was, at that time, both ASCAP and BMI were on strike for a period of time, and Goodnight Irene was one of the few songs that they could play because it was half considered in public domain. So until that was ironed out, that's why it got lots of airplay.
Otherwise, we might not have heard that record, which now is just a part of the American music, the Great American Songbook.
Some people in Eastern Europe, they grow up thinking Goodnight Irene is a Czech folk song because they learned it in school as a child.
He, in an odd way, Leadbelly was doing what the Lomaxes, this is what you were saying, said they were doing or were doing as well. He was collecting songs from individual people. He was collecting spirituals, prison songs, love songs, children's songs, and then making them all his own?
He was, and I think that that is beautiful because there, not everyone was going to be able to make it to record their song. So being able to go around and have the talent to collect those songs and make them your own and give them to the world, I think that's a magical thing, a quality of what he could do. And his talent was that he could hear a song, he could remember it, and he could make a version of it so that it could be recorded and shared in song circles all around. From, you know, he performed in Europe and he performed in New York. He performed in places where many other prisoners that he was surrounded by would never be able to see. So he carried a tradition with every single place that he entered and played his guitar.
In the documentary, Rex Ellis from the National Museum of African American History says this about Leadbelly: his songs tap into something that is at the core of being American. Now we're going to go out with Valerie June singing Working Woman Blues. And a reminder that the Smithsonian Folkways Collection, 5 CDs, being released tomorrow, all of Leadbelly. There's a television show, Legend of Leadbelly, on Smithsonian Channel tonight at 8 p.m. Thank you both so much for being on our show, John Reynolds and Valerie June.